Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 333 for comics originally released on December 24th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Forever Evil number 4. This is the halfway point for this event. And, you know, we're halfway into this thing, Drew, and is it just me or does it feel like the heroes are only just now getting a semblance of some kind of a plan to fight back and do something?
Yeah, I think you're right about that. It's possible because of the distance between issues, too. It seems like it's taken a while to get this thing going, but it's been fun. I'm not going to say I didn't like it. I've really enjoyed what's been going on, but it does seem like we haven't moved very far.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, comparing this to Age of Ultron, 10 issues where it felt like nothing was moving, the heroes weren't doing anything, and not much was happening. I'm really enjoying Forever Evil. I mean, I'm an easy sell with the Crime Syndicate. I've always been a big fan of them. And while it feels like the heroes are just finally kind of coalescing and getting some action together and whatnot, I don't feel like they've been wasting time or decompressed or something like that. I mean, the plot's moving slowly, but a lot's happening, and it feels like this is really kind of an all-encompassing event in many ways. I mean, the way things are starting to pull together, it's taken a while to get any sense of who's going to fight the Crime Syndicate, but I think we've got at least two things going on here, with a third in the works, I think, coming up soon over in Justice League. So I think it's just taken a while for people to you know, regroup after, you know, the Crime Syndicate took over in a big way. I mean, I'm enjoying this. I think a lot's happening. I think the art's terrific. The story is good. There are a couple of nitpicks I'm going to have here and there. I love the two-page spread we get early on with the Batcave.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Is it just me, or is every time we get something like this, it seemed like the place has been totally overhauled and redesigned somewhat?
I haven't noticed that.
The cases where the uniforms are, that was a little different this time. You know, where the dinosaur and the penny are, that always shifts and whatnot. I mean, Alfred moves stuff around. I get that. These things are obviously really lightweight on coasters or something. I don't know. The one that really jumped out at me this time, though, was the Bat computer itself. Because I thought they had done a really good job over in the Batman titles of late, particularly just, you know, with the whole new 52, really establishing that kind of computer console thing, having kind of a bat-shaped motif and whatnot, and big screens and whatnot. Whereas here, it looked, frankly, a little unimpressive.
Oh, yeah, it's got a different look to it, doesn't it?
It's not a big deal, but it was something I noticed. And it's the kind of thing, would it kill them to have, like, a consistent look and feel for the big set pieces in the DC universe? Of which, let's face it, there's the Batcave and a handful of others, if that.
I wonder if, the editor of the Bat family of titles, of course, would catch this, but because it's probably a different editor overseeing this event, so maybe they wouldn't have that attention to the actual bat-centric details to make sure that happens.
I'm willing to give him some fudge factor on what the costume looks like, figuring he's got multiples, what the Batmobile looks like, because he obviously has multiples. But for something iconic like the Batcave, particularly after they had Jim Lee do that, what, four-page spread in, I forget which title that was, but one of the titles of the New 52. I mean, they've had a couple of things where they've had some of their key players creatively say, this is what it looks like.
Oh.
And I'm not going to say the other artists have to slavishly follow that, but being at least a little more in line with it would be nice.
Yeah, it would be nice that every time you see the Batcave, it's not a surprise.
Yeah. Again, not a huge deal, but something I noticed and something that I think would build up a sense of stability and realism in their world. I did find it interesting, some of what goes on in the Batcave and how, you know, unsurprisingly, Batman has a plan.
Yeah.
Again, 4 issues in, about time we find out about it. Not too hideously surprising what some of it is. Looking forward to seeing that play out. The other thing that kind of got me on this is, we found out either in this, or it might have been in the Justice League issue, where there was mention of No, I think it wasn't this one. Yeah, Johnny Quick and Atomica are already in battle with the Doom Patrol and whatnot. Throwaway line.
Yeah.
This would have been a great time for DC to have done a bunch of one-shots featuring some of the unseen characters like, say, the Doom Patrol. Just get them out there, see what kind of interest there is in those characters and whatnot, and really flesh out the New 52 a bit more with some quick done-in-one, play-into-the-event type stuff.
You know, I would have enjoyed that more than the Arkham Rogues and Argus miniseries. If they would have taken those 18 issues and done one-shots with various battles and clashes between Syndicate and Hero and other bad guys, I think that would have been more fun. And not as a slave to these contrived plots that really aren't working that well in the other minis.
Well, yeah, I'm liking the Rogues one, but the Arkham one, I agree, is kind of a little played out for me. It would have been fun to see a bunch of lesser characters and maybe some new ones even, and just kind of get not a shotgun thing, but enough to see who these characters are, and like I said, flesh out the universe. I think 18 issues of that, they could have done, you know, one a week or whatever, and it's just been a lot of fun and a good kind of side thing for Forever Evil.
Yeah. Doggone it. Where were you when the planning meetings?
I've been around. They just haven't asked. Can't say that I blame them. I mean, this is easy to say sometimes in hindsight, and not going to say I had brilliant ideas in the room. Would have been nice to have been asked, that's for sure. It's interesting, though, because, again, the heroes are finally getting a plan together and stuff, but it does feel like a lot has happened, both in this and I think they're using the Justice League title as a really good companion piece for this. So all in all, I've really been enjoying what they're doing, but again, Crime Syndicate, easy sell for me. Still curious who their captive is that they've got in the hood and stuff like that. I've got a couple of guesses.
Yeah.
But at this point, it's pretty much wild speculation.
Yeah, I think this has been really a fun event. And I do like the tandem nature with the Justice League titles. It's making me read Justice League again because I had kind of abandoned that book a while ago. And I've been keeping up with it now with this. And I've really been enjoying those as well. They've been really solid. Like you said, the art's great in this, and the story's really compelling. And this has been so much fun. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't really have a clue. I'm just kind of going along for the ride, which sometimes is fun. And I can't wait to get there. I gave this a strong 4, and I really liked it.
Yeah, I would go with a strong 4 also. As for what's going to happen, I will be horribly disappointed if we don't get a Justice League versus the Crime Syndicate fight in this. I mean, I had expected it to start with that, and I'm sure expecting it to end with that. Obviously, if it had started with that, the Syndicate would have been victorious, and if it ends with that, the Justice League needs to be victorious. It's just the way things go. But I'm curious what they're going to do with the Crime Syndicate, where they're going to kind of squirrel them away, because I can't really see just imprisoning them, but I want them to be available for future rematches.
Yeah, we've got, you know, another strong showing by Lex Luthor in this. Not quite as strong as before, but he's still a great character, and again makes the case for let's give this guy his own book.
If he doesn't get one coming out of this, I'm going to be surprised, because you're right. This was a really strong issue for him. We got some good insight into his character, his motivation, and sides of him that we don't often see. And I think in the right hands with a good direction, a Lex Luthor title could top the charts.
Yeah.
No questions asked.
Yeah. And I'm anxious to see how he plays out in this miniseries. I think it's going to be really important. He's going to be really a key, and it should be pretty fascinating. So I'm psyched.
I think it's going to, his status quo at the end of this is he will be visibly having helped the heroes win the day. That will get him the equivalent of a full pardon, etc., reset the slate, and it'll put him in a position where he can be the public hero and himself. And really kind of walk that line. It could put him in a very interesting position.
Yeah.
So I hope they're able to leverage that and kind of run with that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sure.
This is Origin 2 number 1. This is the second mini-series talking about Wolverine's origin. And I had mixed feelings on this, starting with the cover gimmick, with the little overlay kind of a thing, which was nice, it was cool. I don't know that it really added anything to the issue other than maybe a little cost. I liked the story, but it felt like it was paced, I'm going to say for a movie, but really I guess for a trade paperback, where what I read here was good, but it felt like it was prologue for the story and not the story. You know, we hit the two-page, three-page title credits thing most of the way in, get a few more pages after that, and I'm like, okay, this is great, but when do we start moving forward? I felt like a lot of this, and tell me if you disagree, I felt like a lot of this could have been done in like an 8 or 10 page story in like a Marvel Comics Presents sort of a thing without really removing any plot points. Obviously condensing, but not removing any of the story. What did you think?
I thought that last big splash page with in front of the cave with the kind of bodies and blood lying there, about 18 pages in, would have been a great place to end it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been pretty cool. Maybe a couple more, go ahead and finish up the storyline with that, with the lone wolf. That would have been fine. And end it right around there, right around 20. Then you just kind of got these other little tack on pages and extra stuff that didn't really add that much to it.
The 4 pages after the credits and title.
Yeah, yeah. But I thought this was okay. I enjoyed the, you know, the sparseness of it, I guess. You know, more pictorial than not really dialogue driven at all, and you didn't need to read it.
I enjoyed the sparseness of it. You didn't need to read it. That's like praising the decompression.
Yeah.
I applaud you for that.
You could have just covered all the boxes up with any dialogue or any narration in it and just followed along that way and been fine, which is probably means it really didn't have much to say. But it was okay. And
I think we're saying the same thing, but you're doing it much, much more positively and charitably than I was.
I think the art was pretty. I really enjoyed the art. I thought it was a nice interpretation of Wolverine and in the wild. And I liked the drawing.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the bear a lot. The bear was very well drawn and an interesting figure on the page. Looked good. Liked the colors a lot. The story was just didn't say anything. Didn't mean much to me. Very, very, very inconsequential. And this is something I'll forget about as soon as we're done here. But it was okay. While I was reading it, it was fine.
No, I agree with that entirely. While you're reading it, it's an entertaining, well-done story. The art's beautiful. The story makes sense. It follows along. The captions do a decent job, you know, conveying what they need to convey without being overly expository or redundant. But I felt there wasn't any substantial substance to this. And for the first issue of moving his origin along, okay, he lived with the wolves for a while. Got it. Didn't need a full issue of that, particularly a $4.99 issue. And this had about 27 pages of story. I don't remember if I counted the text page at the beginning or not. I think I did. 4 pages of title and credits, and then a bunch of filler crap at the end. For the price tag, for the page count, for the literal weight of the book, I was expecting more. Again, what I got wasn't bad, but it was substantially lightweight.
Yeah, that I definitely agree with you there.
I mean, my nature is to pick apart stories and stuff like that, and there's nothing to really pick apart here because there wasn't a whole lot of story there to grasp my hooks into. If this were just a done in one, hey, here's a light story of Wolverine when he was out in the wild or whatever, I probably would have read this, enjoyed it, and said, hey, this is great. But for something that is supposed to be a first issue of a major chapter in his origin and his life, it felt like it was all prologue with 2 hints at who the villain of the piece is, sprinkled in there for those in the know. And I'm not even sure did you pick up on those 2 pieces?
No. And to be fair, I spent about 3 minutes on this book because it didn't take much more than that. It was a quick read and, there's not a lot to linger on.
All right. So for the ROI, $5, 3 minutes, how'd that work out for you?
not well. But you know, you get the good discount from DCVS, thankfully. And, But still, it's a 3. I mean, I can't say this is something that you that's bad. I don't think it's a bad comic by any sense. I thought it was really nice. It just didn't have much meat on the bone.
Yeah, that's exactly where I came down. I was just, I think, a little more outraged by the price for the lack of content and the way they tend to hype these sorts of things. For what was actually on the page, yeah, they did a job. 3 out of 5. It was an average story with an above-average number of pages for a below-average amount of content.
Yeah, when you factor in the price, it keeps it down as a low 3. It really does because of the high price tag.
Yeah. I'm hoping for a lot better out of the subsequent issues, and I don't think I'll be disappointed because I don't think it could be any more decompressed, but we'll find out. I've been wrong on that before, that's for sure. Yeah, so, 3 out of 5, not a strong start. I don't know that there's really any more to say on that.
Yep.
So, our next book is the, Saviors #1 from Image Comics. What were your thoughts on that?
Originally, when I saw the solicit, I thought, okay, I wondered what happened, what James Robinson was going to do next after leaving Earth 2. That's great. And then they had some art sample pages in the previews catalog, and they were horrible. And I thought, my goodness, this is not my art style. This is not something I don't even, you know, they didn't really have any a strong bit of dialogue in there or anything to kind of get a sense for it. So I thought, I don't even know if I want to waste my time. But then when I read the issue, which I tend to like to do before, you know, make passing judgment completely.
That's very fair of you. That's kind. It's reasonable.
Yeah, I go the extra mile, you know. And it was really like 90% of the way through, I thought it was really great. I was really happy with the character. I liked the guy. Bit of a stoner, but I liked him anyway. He was compelling and interesting and easy to root for, kind of, in a laid back slacker sort of way. The town and the townsfolk, you got to meet a few of them, and I kind of liked a lot of the characters. And then we had a little twist there at the end, I guess, or introduction to a supernatural element that I didn't think fit very well. I didn't know that's what we were going for. And I guess it remains to be seen how well that's going to work in this story. I liked the first 90% of it better than the last 10%. But still, it was a fun read and enjoyable and a nice world that he's building. So I did like it.
It's interesting because this is not something I was planning on picking up, and if we hadn't planned to review it, I wouldn't have read it. I'll be very upfront about that. I was able to get the preview copy from the Image website. That always helps. Overall, I liked it. I'm not entirely sure if I'm going to continue with it or not. I probably will, but it's one of those where it has me interested. Like you said, it's a likable character, but it didn't completely hook me and sell me, and part of it was the way the story started out was heavy on exposition and literally getting introduced to this guy's life, what his days are like, what the town is like. And it was a highly effective way to do it, as Thomas is explaining his life to this literal lizard. But it wasn't the most entertaining. It wasn't the most inventive. It was the easy way to tell the story. And again, nothing wrong with that, because it got me introduced to this stuff, it got me intrigued, and I like how we got the reveal, that supernatural element you're talking about, which kind of gets the story moving within the first issue. We get a literal cliffhanger ending, which had a good hook and a reason for me to come back for more, but I'm not sure how things are going to play out with that end part. And it could go in a couple of different directions, some of which I might like, some of which I might not. And I would have appreciated coming out of the first issue with a clearer sense of, yes, this is for me, no, this is not. But they're kind of getting the benefit of the doubt for now in terms of it's not something I'm totally against, so I'll probably get the next issue.
Yeah, I'll read the next one as well. I'm definitely going to read issue 2. Again, it's probably a short leash. I probably won't give it more than 3 to make my decision, because just it just seems like it was a different story, and the story took a turn at the end that I'm not sure I want to continue reading it. If it's that madcap action that we get at the end, I don't want to read another one of those books. So, I like the slice of life stuff at the beginning. That kind of hooked me. I enjoyed that. And that's what I'd like more of, but I doubt I'm going to get that. But I'm going to stick around anyway to find out, because there were some really cool characters that were introduced. I want to see more of them and the relationships between our main character and some of the supporting cast that we were given. So I thought it was a good, solid comic. So I gave it a 3.
I can see that. Yeah, for me, it's the same thing. It's a 3. I think it had the potential of getting up to a 4, but didn't quite get there. And part of that was just, again, a little heavy on exposition at the beginning as they set up stuff. But again, it was starting from a blank slate, so some of that was needed. The juxtaposition, the quandary of having a very literal slacker, self-admitted slacker character, and then putting him into what seems to be an action-adventure kind of a situation, doesn't seem to fit.
Yeah.
That's the challenge I think they've got going forward.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I felt the same way. It didn't feel like the stories worked together that well. So we'll see.
Yeah, might not be the right protagonist for the story, but who knows? Could give it a very interesting spin because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you said, we'll see. Now, there were only a handful of other books that came out this week, so I figured, what the hell, we'll probably just walk through those real quick. Did you read the Justice League one?
Oh, yeah. That was great. It was nice to get those other origin stories for the rest of the Syndicate. That was really cool. And really helped flesh them out.
Well, flesh them out and in their world. I mean, as we got, Power Rings, Johnny Quick's Atomicas, and Deathstorms, particularly the Johnny Quick Atomica
one. That was the best one, yeah.
We kind of got that world's Rogues Gallery equivalent. And it's fun to see how the world of Earth-3 is similar yet different. I thought it was interesting that we were explicitly not given an origin for Superwoman. Something is up with that.
Yeah, and it was this thing. That was really cool.
Yeah.
It's a good twist.
Using these issues to give us the backstory on the Crime Syndicate in Earth-3, I thought was a smart, smart move. It really helps flesh out the Forever Evil event. And I think starting with the next issue, since this is all the origins that we're going to get, I think Cyborg's taking center stage and will probably be planning some sort of counterattack on the Crime Syndicate. As I was finishing up with this, the Hooded Man kind of played into this.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple of guesses as to who it is. I'm going to go with my lead choices at the moment, and this changes with the wind, of course. It's the Earth-3 version of either Lex Luthor, who I think is an obvious choice, the Joker, possibly Commissioner Gordon, or Steve Trevor. What we know is it's an ordinary human physically, but somebody that they're, you know, obviously wanting to keep captive. I don't know. Why not just leave him on the dead Earth? I don't know.
yeah. We don't know what his purpose is either. I guess if we knew his purpose, then that would let us know exactly who it was, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm almost wondering if it is, it would be really wild if it was an Earth-3 version of Billy Batson. That could be a game changer.
Hmm.
But I really don't think it's him. But fun issue. They're doing great stuff there.
Yeah, Superwoman is a real compelling character, and I think she's might be stealing the show here in the next couple issues, I would hope.
She has often been a pivotal character in the Crime Syndicate just because of where she sits between Owlman and Ultraman, and that triangle there has very explosive possibilities. So looking forward to seeing where they go with all that stuff. How about the Avengers?
Yep, how about it?
This is a start of a new arc. What I really liked with this, we've got the beginning, middle, and end of something, while it very clearly serves to set up something else, something bigger, and there was an almost epic feel to the story in places.
Yeah.
Almost to the point of being at the cost of characterization and a more personal feeling to the story. There were a few places where we got some character moments, there are a few others where it's just this big, you know, plot-driven, not character-driven kind of thing.
Thor as the grill master on the barbecue was probably my favorite part.
I don't know. Hulk bringing out the pies. That was good. There's something to be said.
Good stuff.
The Avengers partying, yeah. It's always fun. Great art, great story. looking forward to seeing where this goes. I'll admit I've been a little skeptical at times with the way they're kind of expanding the Avengers franchise and whatnot. But, you know, they've got the story and it seems to be working.
Yeah, and there was the whole conversation between was it Tony and Cap about the empty slots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That I really, is that all stuff that's coming out of Infinity or one of the Avengers books that I just don't know what's going on there?
With the slots?
Yeah.
That goes back to the start of this title when they said, you know, we need to get a little bigger. And they kind of rethought how it works. And my impression with the new Avengers World title or whatever is they're going big. It used to be that the Avengers had a charter that limited them to like 6 or 7 active members or whatever. And then occasionally they'd get up to like 15 or whatever right after, you know, a big major event or whatever. And they're like, well, got too many Avengers. What do we do? You know, and at one point that would be the sort of thing where you'd get like a West Coast team or, you know, whatever. And I think they've just decided to chuck that concept and there's more threats. We get more heroes. And kind of having a core team and, you know, people they could have as de facto leaders of sub teams or whatever. So I like the concept. It seems to be playing out reasonably well. It's just kind of interesting that I don't know that Mighty Avengers falls into this umbrella or the Avengers AI stuff or some of the other literal Avenger titles. But it's interesting and it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Now, the other three books that came out this week were all independent books in alphabetical order. Deceivers number one. This is one of the ones we had discussed reviewing as our other book for the week. Did you read that one?
I glanced at it, but I haven't read it yet.
I read it. I'm glad we picked Saviors.
Okay.
I like the idea of this more than the execution. It's about a pair of con men operating in Europe who get recruited by the CIA. Okay, not a bad premise. It takes up until the end for a lot of the premise as pitched to really hit the page. Prior to that is tons of dialogue where there's cons, double crosses, the lay of the land, who's who, what's what, who's going on, you know, who's double crossing who's playing who, whatever. And it's just heavy on dialogue to the point where it gave a pretty fleshed out world, but while I'm reading it, I didn't have any real reason to care. It fell seriously flat for me. There are a couple of places where the art was really not good, kind of scribbly or whatever. Stephen Grant's capable of better than this. This one just, for me, the execution really didn't click with me. I am glad we did not pick that as one of the official reviews for the week. Hopefully you'll read it and think better of it than I did.
I doubt it. I doubt I even read it now.
Read it and see what you think. Or not. Up to you. One of the other two was the Doctor Who 2013 special from IDW. This, I believe, wraps up the Doctor Who license for IDW, and this was an adventure he had in a parallel dimension in which he is a fictional character.
Who gets the license now?
I don't know who gets the license now. I have not seen it pop up anywhere.
Well, I think it's a much hotter license now than it was when they got it the first time.
Oh, yeah, when they got it like 5 years ago, 6, 7 years ago, whenever they did, actually it probably says in the back of this. It was still Doctor Who. It's always been a decent license, but it was, much hotter now than, when they got it. 2007 is when they got it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's really hot now. This story was too meta for me. It was essentially him going to a Doctor Who convention and seeing what Doctor Who is seen like in our world.
Ugh.
And it was fun. It was good. It was just not the kind of story I wanted to be reading right now.
Yeah.
I think they should have, granted they've gone to the well a few times, done a story with all the different doctors and done something where it was a good retrospective maybe of what IDW had done with the character or something. Whereas this, again, wasn't a bad story. It just didn't work for me. And then the other one that came out this week was Robotech Voltron number one. I am not a Robotech fan. And I'm not really much of a Voltron fan. I've read some of the comics. I'm more familiar with Voltron, only have a passing familiarity with the Robotech stuff. This issue was fairly evenly split between the two properties, but I felt like it was aimed at fans of at least one, if not both, of the properties. In other words, it was preaching to the choir, because I didn't feel it really introduced me to either property particularly well, and as such, I didn't really feel a connection to the story. I lacked any good kind of entry point or vantage point or way into it. It wasn't bad, but it felt like I was watching events with no emotional connection to it, and that never plays out well for me. So that was literally everything that came out this week. Nice small week for Christmas.
Yeah, nice palate cleanser.
Now one of the other things it didn't come out new this week, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong on this. Was Private Eye number 5?
Yeah, it was. I don't remember when I got the email. But it doesn't really have a strict release date. I just get the email and go to the website and it's out.
They continue to be doing amazing stuff over there.
So you read 5?
I read 5.
Yeah, it was great. And we got a personality or a kind of a reveal of our main character that we didn't know. We did not know, and it was revealed in such a way that just made you kind of sit back and think, that's kind of the point. That is the point, that you don't need to know these sort of things. And it kind of harkened back to the whole privacy issue that this book is all, it does amazing things, this book, with, while weaving you through a caper story or a mystery story, and talks about the society that we're in currently and what we've done with our own privacy and the internet and Big Brother and government. And it does such a fantastic job. And we're only 5 issues. We're halfway through this book, which is depressing that they're only going to do 10 issues, because I could just read this book forever.
On the one hand, I agree with you there. On the other hand, I think one of the strengths of this book is that it does have an ending and that they're working decidedly towards it. I think one of the weak points of a lot of ongoing titles is that never-ending battle aspect and the sense of treading water, needing to crank out another issue. Now, I'm hoping, once Private Eye is done, that Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin team up on another property of equal caliber and just tell another really good story that way.
Or a season 2 of this.
That's fine, too.
That would be fine, too. Make this a story arc, take a break, recharge the batteries, do something for, a Big 2 or whatever it takes to pay the bills, and then come back to this. I'd still love to know how they're doing monetarily. I hope they're doing okay with this.
I hope they are, too. I'm really curious with this because I really like the distribution model and the entire approach they're taking of pay what you think it's worth, and here's the files, none of this proprietary format or any of this other stuff. You want it as PDF, great. You want it as CBR, CBZ, great. You know, whatever. Because I really think it is inherently respectful to the readers, and it gears itself towards a meritocracy of, if you think it's crap, don't pay for it, don't read it. But because they're not guaranteed anything, and they're not doing it like a Kickstarter thing either, where pay us and we'll do something brilliant. No, we've done something, we think it's brilliant, now pay us, you know, and pay us what you think it's worth. I like that philosophy, and I really hope it works out for them, because they're taking significant risks doing that financially and just with the way they're allocating their time. And as a digital comic, I think it's really hit the mark in terms of it reads really well digitally.
And he also, in the afterword or at the end of his letters page, he says, if you're still digging this, share the PDF of our first issue with your friends and loved ones. So I might just like do a blanket email to everybody I know who even thinks of, knows the word comic, and send them the first issue and a link to the panel syndicate and say, read this. There's more here, you know, because it's just something really great, I think.
Yeah, no, it's something that if you want true science fiction, and by which I will define that to be something that not only takes science and moves it forward in some respects, but takes culture and society and plays out how those changes technologically have impacted society, both good and bad, and plays around with that. this is doing all of that, and it's doing it brilliantly. So yeah, definitely spreading the word is something I think everybody should be doing, for these guys, because, they're putting their A game out there, and it shows.
Or if you can just go to panelsyndicate.com and do what John did and just download all 5 issues. Don't pay him a dime, and you'll feel bad after you read them, because you know it's well worth it.
I wouldn't say I feel bad, but I am cheap.
Oh, at some point you will pay them.
Yes.
I have a feeling.
Well, and again, I am trying to make sure to get the word out, because, you know, I think, I mentioned them on my top 10 for CBR and stuff. They're doing good work. It deserves to be read. And they deserve to get paid for it. I'm just too cheap to pay for digital. I still haven't totally gotten over that hurdle. I mean, I have qualms about paying, you know, $4.99 for a print copy, even with the discount for, like, Origin 2, number one that we reviewed earlier. But there's something about the physical aspect of it, even though it is a creative work, and I know that's kind of a silly stand to have, but, you know, hey, I want them to be successful. I want them to show that business model can work. Mm-hmm. Because I really think comics is in need of a more viable business model.
And I think, although I want them to do print versions of this, I understand why they're not going to. And I think if you're going to talk the talk, you have to walk the walk. And they said this is a different way of distributing comics. Mm-hmm. So they can't go back now and say, okay, now we're going to put this out in previews, you know, pre-order your copies today. And I can understand that. I would like to be able to buy it in a variety of formats. I would be able to give this as a gift and as a print form, but it's just me being selfish. I get exactly why they're doing what they're doing. And they're leaving a lot of money on the table, and they're standing by their principles to do that, because I think this would be huge in print.
I think when it's all said and done, a single collection would be the way to go, but I also agree that they've made a very vocal stand and a very understandable, and I kind of agree with them almost, even though I'd rather see it in print, as to not printing it.
Yeah.
They, I think, see the wait for the trade mentality aspect that could kill them, but if I could get a nice trade or hardcover of it too, I certainly would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. It's a tough dilemma. It's like, I want them to print, but I want them to stand by their principles too. But we'll see what happens. I'm going to be curious what they follow it up with after it successfully completes, and I have no doubt that it will successfully complete the next 5 issues.
And they did say also that there is another creative team in the pipeline, that when this ends, there will be another launch on panelsyndicate.com to take its place. Or maybe you'll get the launch of the next title before this one ends. They alluded to that in the letters page as well.
I would have it personally overlap a little, say between the 9th and 10th issue, launch the next one.
Yeah, I think that'd be the way to go.
Because that way people are still coming back for that final issue, and oh, there's this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope they're able to make a serious go of this. You know, again, I much appreciate the fact that they're doing the work and then putting it out there versus the, you know, Kickstarter idea of pay us a lot of money and eventually we'll do something. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Man, it was a short week. That'll do it for me.
All right, cool. Join us next week as we discuss Aquaman 26 from DC, Savage Wolverine 13 from Marvel, and Twilight Zone number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.